the House Committee on Human Services and Housing on Wednesday, February 12th, 2014, 3 p.m. I just want to let people know that we have scheduled, stated in the schedule, that we would have a work session on House Bill 4073 and 4115, and actually we have decided not to do that. We're going to be putting together a work group to work on this issue because we're finding out that it's very complicated and complex, and we want to make sure that we get all the stakeholders involved in this. And as Representative Gilliam, who isn't here, had said last week, the short session is the wrong place to take up really complex issues. So we're going to give it a thorough study during this next year. Next year, we will deal with this in a very thorough place, and we'll be inviting folks who have come here before. We would want a representative from one of the groups of the users and also of the shops that sell those products. We will want to hear from the restaurants, from education folks, from the counties, from the public parks, medical professionals, the business and building owners. And certainly, we're already hearing from the heart, lung, and cancer folks. We'll want to get them involved. So we're very concerned at the alarming popularity of this among our youth, and we're going to deal with that during the work session, or work group, not a work session, a work group during the interim. And we'll want the input from all of you folks. So thank you for the work you've done. We've learned so much. We really appreciate people staying for the long hearing that we had one evening last week. We heard things that we'd never heard before. So it's important for us to have this information and important for us to deal with it in a thorough way. So thank you so much for the folks who came, and I know especially for you. I know you stayed in Salem several days because of this. So thank you so much for your input.
Madam
thank
Chair,
you. Yes.
Can I just say I hope that next year when you get involved you don't have that dilemma, because that's, you know, to have come three times when you're
I've made one day, half a day of medication. I came Monday not intending to stay, and I made half a day of medication last for 3 days.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And my last $5 went to go to the cab to be here today. Thank you guys. I really do want to be a part of it.
I'm sorry, I can't let you speak from the audience because it's not recorded, so I appreciate that, but we're happy to have you here. So with that, we're going to open up, which one should we open first? We'll open up the hearing and work session on House Bill 4151.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4151 was carried over from Monday. This is the measure that requires completion of commenced investigations of abuse by the Department of Human Services with 120 days report, directs DHS to create a database of records and plan for standardized investigation protocols as specified in the measure, requires DHS to keep a registry of applicants and employees responsible for the care of vulnerable persons in certain facilities, operative January 1st, 2015, requires DHS to inform adult foster home of post-prison supervision status of convicted sex offenders applying for admission, and permits foster homes to refuse applicants and transport or discharge existing residents based on that status. It renames and permanently continues the existence of the Oregon Elder Abuse Prevention Work Group and reinstates its previous area of study. It requires a report to the legislature by December 31st, 2014. It declares emergency is effective on passage. The Dash 6 Amendment modifies definitions of abuse, neglect, and sexual abuse for purposes of ORS Chapter 124. That's the Civil Abuse Reporting and Prevention Statutes. And it modifies the definition of sexual abuse for purposes of assessing civil penalties. It also provides for a single operative date of January 1st, 2015 for all the sections that it's modifying. Incorporates an existing definition of home care worker for purposes of DHS creation of, and maintenance of records. Madam Chair, no revenue impact on the Dash 6, and a fiscal statement has issued that has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much, Cheyenne. Any questions about this bill? Okay. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated 2-10-2014.
Vice Chair Gomberg moves to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated 2-10-2014. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, the amendment is adopted. Okay.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt House Bill 4151 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Gomberg moves House Bill 4151 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there a discussion? Okay. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Gallego?
Aye.
Representative Gelfand?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Excused?
Representative Kenny Dyer?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Wisnant?
Aye.
Representative Whitson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gomberg?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Fumé?
Aye. The motion passes. Congratulations to Representative Gilliam. I'm sorry he's ill. And to the Representative Val Hoyle. So now it goes to Ways and Means, and then I would assume Representative Gilliam would carry it along on the floor along with Representative Hoyle. I will close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 4151 and open up the public hearing and work session on House Bill 4065. Sorry? All right? Okay, and so we have...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4065 will be familiar to the members. It is a redraft of House Bill 3499 from the regular session in 2013. This is a bill that requires notice of a trustee's sale on a foreclosed home to caution prospective purchasers. The property may have been a site for methamphetamine production or manufacture. It declares an emergency is effective on passage. There's a pretty thorough record available on the House Bill 3499 from 2013. We'll try to link that or re-upload those documents and materials to supplement this record. But it is a redraft of that bill. It has no revenue impact, and we are still waiting for a fiscal impact. The previous measure, however, House Bill 3499 from 2013, had a minimal impact.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Representative from the other side of the dais.
Thank you very much, Chair Tomei and committee members. For the record, I'm Representative Gail Whitsitt from House District 56, which is Klamath and Lake Counties. And I do want to say, to start with, I'm not sure where to put this in, we do have a Dash 1 amendment, which I have agreed to, so my testimony is in support of the House bill with the Dash 1 amendment.
My apologies, Madam Chair, committee members, we got that today. I just hadn't had time to summarize it. I forgot to mention that it was available.
And so we have talked about...
And it's posted on the list as well.
Oh, it's already posted.
It
so we talk, this is not the one we talked about being added in the Senate. Got it. Okay, go ahead.
Oregon has been one of the states hit hardest by the methamphetamine problem, especially in rural areas. We outlawed the sale of pseudoephedrine several sessions ago in order to help curb the production of meth in our state, but we still have a methamphetamine problem. While the numbers of meth labs have decreased dramatically in recent years, meth cookers have found ways to circumvent our pseudoephedrine laws. The, quote, shake-and-bake method allows meth to be produced in smaller batches using only one box of cold medicine. I'm here today to bring forward a bill regarding the dispensation of private homes that were used in meth production in Oregon and that are now in foreclosure and or up for auction in the state. A little background on methamphetamine. Meth works by creating a surge of dopamine, which causes an intense rush of pleasure or a prolonged sense of euphoria. Over time, meth destroys dopamine receptors, making it impossible to feel pleasure. Although these pleasure centers can heal over time, research suggests that damage to users' cognitive abilities may be permanent. Chronic use can lead to psychotic behavior, including paranoia, insomnia, anxiety, extreme aggression, delusions, hallucinations, and even death. Research by Dr. Richard Rawson of UCLA's Integrated Substance Abuse Program has determined that during methamphetamine use, the brain releases 12 times the volume of dopamine as a person would get from eating food, having sex, or engaging in other activities that humans enjoy. The dopamine release from meth is unlike any other experience the brain knows. For example, sex can cause dopamine levels to jump to 100 to 200 molecular units, and cocaine causes them to spike up to 350 units. While meth causes the release from a normal base level to about 1,250 units of dopamine. However, when the drug wears off, users experience profound depression, and feel the need to keep taking the drug to avoid the crash. Meth, like all stimulants, causes the brain to release high doses of adrenaline, the body's flight or fight mechanism, including anxiety, wakefulness, and intensely focused attention called tweaking. Meth abuse causes the destruction of tissues and blood vessels, inhibiting the body's ability to repair itself. Blood vessels constrict, cutting off the steady flow of blood to all parts of the body. Meth users' teeth rot and fall out and break off at the gum. In 2005, Minnesota Department of Corrections had a doubling of the cost of dental services over the previous 5 years due to extensive dental work performed on former meth addicts. In Oregon, the prevalence of crystal meth is believed to be the cause of a recent rise in syphilis, and state health officials fear it may lead to a major rise in cases of HIV. Meth is extremely addictive in a very short period of time and very hard to kick. Some of the chemicals used in the production of methamphetamine include anhydrous ammonia, which is found in fertilizers, red phosphorus, which is found in matches, and lithium, which is found in batteries, among a plethora of dangerous and potentially deadly chemicals. Homes used for meth production retain the residue of these chemicals. The residue has been found to cause illness in the residents now living in them. Often these are new purchasers who are not informed of the home's past. Allowable residue in a home in Oregon is 0.5 micrograms. Some homes have been found to contain from 50 to 70 times the allowable amounts of meth residue under the law, even after they've been remodeled. Oregon has a law in which homeowners are required to disclose if the home was used to produce dangerous drugs and would need the claim verified by the state health department. However, Oregon presently does not have mandatory testing or mandatory posted notice for foreclosed homes. For example, those homes whose original owners are no longer around to describe their knowledge of the home's past. These are the homes this bill is concerned with. A simple home testing kit for methamphetamine residue is available for a relatively small amount of money, about $50 to $60, including processing. This allows potential homeowners to test for the presence of meth residue and decide for themselves if they wish to purchase the home and then embark on a course to clean the meth house if they can. I'm most concerned with those foreclosed houses which are now being auctioned to the public and which have no access by the public until the day before or the day of the auction. There is no way to determine the potential for meth residue by potential buyers in that time frame. It would seem an important public health issue to either inform by posting on a foreclosed and/or auction home a statement that the home has not been tested for methamphetamine, or to actually test homes that do not allow public access to their interiors prior to sale and let potential buyers know what they may be purchasing. I'm going to have Kelsey, who's my legislative assistant, read the testimony from a young man in Klamath Falls that has lived the nightmare of purchasing a family home from Freddie Mac that was contaminated with over 70 times the allowable amount of meth, even after the home was sanded, cleaned, and remodeled. His name is Jonathan Hankins, and Kelsey will tell you his story. This is what prompted me to bring this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative. Kelsey?
Chair Tomei and Committee, my name is Kelsey Ferry. I'm Representative Whitsett's LA. I will be reading testimony on behalf of the Hankins family, Jonathan, Beth, and Ezra. Like many Americans and small business owners, my family has faced financial struggle due to the economy. We too have faced foreclosure with an upside-down mortgage while my wife was a full-time nursing student and I tried to hold together a struggling business, during which we even lived with family to alleviate financial pressure. We were ecstatic when my wife graduated with her RN license in the summer of 2011 and acquired a full-time job where she continues working as an emergency room nurse. In 2012, we started pursuing the expansion of our family by means of adoption and started considering taking a chance at home ownership. Once again, we had been hit pretty hard by the economy and other unforeseen challenges, but this was the year we were going to get back on our feet. We decided to research houses that were well within and below our means in order to tackle our debts. We were even willing to take on projects that would need a little work. We found some homes in the $30,000 to $40,000 range, which fit the budget we were going for. After our first offer was beat, we jumped at the only one left in our category. It was a foreclosed home with minimal defects, but overall appearance was clean. The backyard had tons of potential for kids, and there was room for expansion when needed. A realtor and family carpenter confirmed that the structure of the house was sound and had good bones. Little did either of us know that these bones were toxic. After 3 weeks of cleaning, painting, sanding, staining, and retiling, our family moved into our new cozy home. Our random collection of furniture fit perfectly. I will never forget the peaceful expression on my wife's face as she sat back inside and said, "After all we've been through, I finally feel like we're at home." After living in our newly remodeled home for only 3 weeks, however, our home buying experience was starting to taste a little less sweet and a lot more bitter. It started when I started experiencing dry mouth, severe sinus, headaches, and nosebleeds. Then Beth and Ezra were having problems breathing and also discovered dry mouth, which developed into sores. The final night we were in the house, Ezra, who was only 2 years old, couldn't even take a drink of water because his mouth hurt so badly. He screamed in agony and threw his cup while trying to explain how badly his mouth hurt. The next morning, we packed our bags and moved back in with Beth's parents. Although our health symptoms improved, what followed in the weeks coming became even worse before it got better. After getting a tip from our neighbor that the former owners were probably cooking meth in what was now our home, we decided to have it tested. The results from the laboratory indicated that our house had 38 micrograms per square foot. The state of Oregon considers a home too contaminated to live in if only 0.50 micrograms per square foot are detected. We couldn't believe that this was possible after all the scrubbing, cleaning, and painting we had done. The costs were quoted for a cleanup were more than the house was even worth. We were aware of the dangers of lead-based paint, asbestos, and asbestos, but nobody thinks to have their home tested for methamphetamines until they're facing the consequences we were. We began to research meth lab homes across the nation and were astonished to discover the countless cases where families have learned that the homes they were living in were former meth labs. Some of those family members became extremely ill and even died due to the exposure. We learned that most of our belongings were most likely contaminated and that our homeowner's insurance didn't cover our losses because it was a pre-existing condition. We even tried contacting Freddie Mac, who sold the home, to discuss the matter. They didn't initially respond to any of our calls or emails. We contacted a lawyer who told us we had no legal recourse because we bought the home in an as-in condition. Even though Oregon is among 23 states that require full disclosure, companies like Freddie Mac are exempt from the laws because they don't have any prior knowledge of the home's history. Our realtor's lawyer even suggested that we default on our mortgage and allow the house to foreclose and not disclose what we had discovered to our lender. When we asked what would happen if the lender foreclosed and sold the toxic home to another family, he told us that it would no longer be our problem. We expressed that we just couldn't do that. He said that it didn't matter according to the law. Walking away quietly was our best and only option. We couldn't believe what we were being told. Anyone we talked to would say something similar like, "I can't believe there aren't any laws against this kind of thing." After realizing that we were stuck, we decided to try to move forward with our lives again by renting another home while doing our best to keep up with mortgage payments until we could decide what we would do. Even though our best legal counsel was to walk away quietly, we wrestled with the reality that if we didn't say something, our home buying nightmare would become someone else's nightmare. To us, sweeping this problem under the rug just didn't seem like a good idea at all. I decided to start an online petition on change.org requesting the mortgage giant Freddie Mac begin testing their properties for methamphetamine contamination. While paying for the cost of the cleanup for our home and for our losses, realizing that it was most likely that nothing would happen, we at least wanted to share about our family experiences while warning future home buyers of the dangers of methamphetamine contamination. Somebody needed to tell home buyers what realtors and title companies aren't telling them. Little did we know that our story would get so much attention. After a petition went viral, collecting over 200,000 signatures, it has been featured on several national media outlets, including Yahoo News, Huffington Post, The Drudge Report, CNN, Inside Edition, World News with Diane Sawyer, Anderson Cooper Live, and ABC's 2020. Thanks to our petition supporters, we were able to get the attention of Freddie Mac. After several months, we have recently come to an agreeable settlement on our house, and Freddie Mac has agreed to review and update their policies to ensure the safety for homeowners. Although this is good news for our family and potentially Freddie Mac customers, we will remain tireless advocates for the sakes of family and future homeowners. Some have told us that methamphetamine epidemic is no longer a concern in Oregon since we have successfully restricted access to pseudoephedrine. But meth addicts and the producers of this horrifying drug will tell you otherwise. My wife, Beth, is a nurse who sees meth addicts in the emergency room on a regular basis. She sees the costly effects of those, even youth, who have already had their innocence wrecked by this horrible drug. But even those who say that meth is no longer a problem in their communities, how many homes are contaminated with the toxic residue? According to a Yahoo News article on October 1st, 2012, regarding the problem with meth-contaminated homes, it's a catch-22 that Joe Mazuka of Meth Labs Cleanup, a national and training company, predicts others can find themselves in. Based on national and state data, Mazuka conservatively estimated there are 2.5 million meth-contaminated homes in the U.S. The sign and indicators aren't always there, he said. You don't see the meth residue. It's extremely dangerous stuff. His concern was echoed at a congressional hearing in August on the efforts to curb domestic methamphetamine production. The U.S. drug czar, head of the President's Office of National Drug Control Policy, testified that U.S. meth lab seizures has more than doubled between 2007 and 2010. And these labs pose a major threat to the public safety environment. Mazuka said the problem is off the charts. We average a call every 3 to 5 minutes. One of the most recent came from Michigan, a state with no disclosure laws, where a father unknowingly purchased a meth-contaminated home. He just buried his 14-year-old daughter after living in it for 2 years, Mazuka said. I could tell you stories like this for days. With or without the disclosure laws, Mazuka believes that scores of home buyers are at risk because only 1 in 10 meth labs are busted. Other times, he says, information can fall through the cracks by the time the big bank or government agency gets past the red tape of selling a foreclosed home. When my mother read this article, she called me and began to cry, not yet fully comprehending the depth of what we were walking through. She said, what happened to this man's daughter, I could have been saying about you, Beth, and my grandson. Buyer beware doesn't mean the same thing as it did when the term was first introduced. The man in Michigan and countless other families like ours shouldn't have to be surprised and confined by such standards and the myth of undercovering such a horrifying reality and grieving our loss. It's essential that the future home buyers know of these dangers firsthand. We ask you to approve House Bill 4065 so that the future families in Oregon don't have to experience the nightmare my family and thousands of others have faced. House Bill 4065 would require sellers to post a notice of warning if the house has not been tested for deadly residue of methamphetamine contamination. We've been mocked by some that we didn't do our due diligence as home buyers, but how could we if the sellers aren't doing theirs. Now all we're asking for is the state to do their due diligence by eliminating the risk of such environmental hazards being brought as homes in Oregon. Now that we know better, hopefully we can do better. Thank you for hearing our story and considering our requests.
Thank you, Kelsey. Representative, thank you for bringing this.
We have a little kit. I don't know if anyone's interested.
So this is an actual methamphetamine kit that you use to test in your home. And it's actually very simple. You take the little square and you put it on your wall, whichever spot you want to test. And then it even comes with gloves to put on.
This is the $50 kit that you were referring to.
This kit is actually from ALS Laboratories in Salt Lake. The kit itself is free. You just pay $9 in shipping, and then they process it for $45, and it's a four-day turnaround. So it's less than $60, and you get your results within a week. So after you put on your gloves, you take the little gauze squares and fold it in fourths, and then you pour the alcohol onto the gauze square. You can do multiple methods to test it, but you basically, the easiest one is to do a Z and then an N to ensure that you're getting the whole surface. If it happens to be a rougher area, they suggest that you blot in lines. Once you have done that on the wall, you just slip the gauze into the tube and you mark it with the date and the location and send it to the lab, and they get you your results.
So, Representative, this bill came to the House last year, right?
Yes.
Do I remember that correctly?
Yes, it passed out of committee. It was in rules, and it passed out of committee unanimously. It went to the floor of the House where it passed out unanimously. It went to the Senate, and there it died, and I do not know why. I was never told.
It's too bad you don't know a senator.
Yeah. He voted for it. I don't know why. I don't think it was a problem with the bill. I think it was a problem of timing and getting session closed down. So.
Okay, thank you. And you do have an amendment, and we have that here, right? And you approve of that amendment, right? Okay. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have some questions.
Yes.
Representative Whitsitt, I am just kind of curious. I'm trying to get a handle on this, reading through your bill. And is this going to be required then of all homes that are being sold here in Oregon? Is that
Just
the suspected?
Only homes that go through the foreclosure, that are in foreclosure, and that are auctioned. There are a number of homes that people can't get into to see until the day that they're auctioned or the day before. And so it doesn't give you enough time to test and get results back. So it doesn't affect any homes that are open for people to see, and they can test the homes. But there are these auction houses that are in foreclosure that you can't test. And so I think it would be beneficial, but I didn't put it in this bill, if the houses were tested before they were put up for auction, but they aren't. So it's just restricted to these auction houses that you can't get into except for in a time period that doesn't allow you to test it.
So when, if I may?
Go ahead.
Yeah. So on lines 22 and 26 of page 1, so what you're saying is residential property sold at a trustee's sale, right? So that is pretty specific about which homes that would be, not all homes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And the, as I understand it, the realtors are on board, the bankers, the, you know, the mortgage holders, et cetera. Everybody, the Dash 1 amendment was to not make this have an emergency clause on it, which I agree to. I'm willing to do whatever we can. I worked with all the groups to get this bill to this point, so it's just restricted to houses that aren't being tested. And there's one other thing on the Dash 1.
Madam Chair.
So,
Representative, yeah.
Thank you. And the reason I dropped this is lobbyists couldn't find colleague.
Yeah.
Representative Whitsitt, thank you very much. I think when we were on judiciary, we heard a lot about this, the dangers. Chris, does the test also work on carpet? Because that was a problem they've talked about. Even you can get the smell in the carpet, not just the walls, too. But
I don't know if it does or not. I mean, if it were me, I would probably, if I were buying a home that was suspect, I'd probably get three or four of these kits, and I would try several different rooms and the floor. But I don't know the answer to that.
But Madam Chair, for the committee and for your Dash 1, which Representative Wissett completely supports, as she said, deletes the emergency clause so that this can be implemented to have more time to implement it, and it also makes the bill prospective, which means in the future.
Right.
And thank you again for bringing the bill forth.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Olson?
I was just going to say that, thanks, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Kelsey, the manufacturer is recommending that it be used on walls for the testing rather than any place else.
Chair Tomei, Rep. Olson. In reading the directions and talking with the company, they mostly suggest doing it on a flat surface, but from my understanding of the meth homes and the research I've done, if you're going to find it, like if you think it's in the carpet, it's more than likely the residue will show up on the walls. They also suggest that if your test does come back positive, that you have someone with a professional background come in and do more tests on your homes, and they can estimate the cost of the cleanup and tell you the particular rooms which may be worse than the other rooms.
Yeah, I can just tell you, Madam Chair and committee members, I mean, if somebody's been cooking meth in a house, everything's going to be saturated. I mean, even your 2x4s, your stud walls and everything will be saturated. That's how bad it gets. So the carpet, I mean, we talked about that before.
Representative Gallegos?
Yeah, I just want to thank the representative for bringing this forward. I mean, it's just such a devastating problem. And I wanted to thank Kelsey. She did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Thank you both.
I did a great presentation. Yeah. I was proud to vote for it last year, and I hope the timing doesn't get in the way this year.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you, Kelsey. We also have Tim Martinez. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on 4065. As the sponsor mentioned, we have worked with her since the early 2013 on this bill, we're pleased to see it pass as it did in the House in the 2013 session. When we looked at the bill for this session, we did feel that the emergency clause would make it difficult to implement right away and could cause potential problems. And also we wanted to make sure it was prospective. And I'm not joined by any of my colleagues here today, but I believe the Oregon Land Title Association and the United Trustees Association, which actually do these sales, are supportive of the amendment as well. So
great.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative?
I would just like, Madam Chair, thank you, Tim, for working with me. I appreciate it, and everyone else that came forward. It was a group effort to get it done, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Certainly welcome.
Thank you. That's all we have who have signed up to testify. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on this bill? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 4065. Colleagues, we don't have a fiscal, but with a two-thirds vote, I think it's true, right?
That's correct.
That we can suspend the rules and send it to the floor and await the fiscal there. So I'm assuming this, it seems like a good bill, and this is the last day we can send a bill out of our committee. So,
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Okay. I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 4065 without having fiscal and or revenue impact statements on hand at this time.
Thank you. I think we do have the revenue impact statement. Yeah, we do have that.
On the underlying bill, yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, on the underlying bill. And we don't have it I just point out we don't have it on the amendment either, right? The revenue or the
no fiscal and fiscal, no revenue. Right. On the amendment.
Representative Olson moves that rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 4065 without having the fiscal impact statement on hand, either for the underlying bill or for the amendment. Those of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 4065. Without the fiscal impact statements at this time, we'll please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
For the record, can we put on there that Representative Wissett does support the amendment? We hope the Senate will accept the amendment when it gets over.
So stated. Thank you, Representative. Okay. Motion carries and rules have been suspended. And now I think we do this one. Right?
So do you have a dash one amendment in addition?
Okay, so why don't we put the dash one amendment first?
We can put the dash one. They didn't know that's why I'm going to say
that.
Stay here, yes.
Thank you, President.
Thank you.
Are you ready for that?
Yes.
Okay, then, Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendments into House Bill 4065. Dated today, or dated 2/10/14.
Representative Olson moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 4065 be accepted, right?
Dated today be adopted.
Dated 2/10/14 be adopted. Any discussion? Any objection? Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just horribly disappointed that I didn't get to make the motion to remove the emergency clause.
You don't like emergencies. I don't like them myself. Well, that's not totally true. Okay, thank you.
On the bill.
Right. Any objection? Seeing none, that motion passes.
Okay, so Madam Chair, I move then that House Bill 4065, as amended, be moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves that House Bill 4065, as amended, be moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay, nothing. So seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Excused.
Representative Kennegeier?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Wisnitz?
Aye.
Representative Wissett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gomberg?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. The motion passes. And Representative Wissett, would you please carry this on the floor?
Thank you
very much. So we're going to stand at ease for just a second, please.
I didn't know that until I looked at that.
Okay, we're back in session.
Back where we are.
Back at work. Thank you. Colleagues, we only have one item on Friday, and it is a report from the work group that Representative Olson and I co-chaired, and Representative Gallegos was a part of, as was Representative Wisnett, on program integrity. And so it might take a half hour. I know that Representative Wisnett had originally invited me to dinner.
Oh,
he rescinded that.
You're invited another time. We'll go together.
And he wants to get out so that he can go to dinner. So it'll be a short meeting on Friday.
I was wondering if you wanted to hold it over till Monday, because this...
I'm going to be gone Monday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's no committee on Monday.
Yes, Vice Chair Gomberg will chair that meeting. So we'll have the agenda for Monday later. But that will be the short agenda for Friday.
Okay.
With that, are we through?
My 1 o'clock
Madam Chair, let's do next Wednesday, too.
Great job.
No, I said he'll be done because House Dad is canceled from 1 to 3.
Sorry.
But will you stay for the meeting on Friday?
Yeah, I wasn't saying he's going to stay. I was saying we do it on Wednesday.
I didn't overlap with that. But Lisa, you're gone.
I stayed the other night for an hour with you.
You did.
I appreciate you doing that. I want you to know that was a lot of people like that lady had traveled, and that was your whole committee stayed to help.
That was a wonderful, wonderful commitment on behalf of the committee. I really appreciate it. Any other business? Seeing none, I will close the House Committee on Human Services and Housing on February 5th.